Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
We are going to talk documentaries on this episode, specifically our experiences and what we saw at the AFI Documentary Film Festival here in Washington, D.C., which was in the third week of June. And part of that Documentary Film Festival, which is one of our favorite festivals of the entire year, was a film called Maiden. And Maiden already has distribution. It's already being released around the country in the major cities, and it's opening in Washington, D.C. this weekend, which is why it's going to bat lead off tonight. Hannah, what makes Maiden so unique? Why? There are many yachtsmen and sailors all over the world. Why is Maiden any different?
Well, I think you said it right there with yachtsmen. There are many yachtsmen, but until 1989, you really did not see many yachtswomen. And so Maiden was the very first all-female crew to do this round-the-world yacht race in 1989. Led by this woman, Tracy Edwards. And so Maiden follows the voyage of this all-female crew. And what makes it really, I think, unique is that they had the wherewithal to have cameras on board their boat during this 30-some-odd-thousand-mile trek around, journey around the world on the high seas. And so that footage is really quite remarkable, and it's fun. And just timing-wise, I think it's great. You know, everybody's kind of amped up about the U.S. Women's Soccer World Cup finals this weekend. So I think the timing's cool. If you want to kind of rev your engines for that one, Maiden is a really good female empowerment inspiring documentary to go see.
But these girls are British. Wow, yeah, most of us will be watching the Americans.
There was an American in the crew. There was one American along the way, but I think more in terms of just the girl power vibe that it brings. And so that's something that I think can be tapped into. And for, you know, all the girls who sail, and I think it's inspiring for guys too. It really isn't so much just about this one woman saying, you know what, this might be a male-dominated field, but darn it, this is my dream. I want to sail. I want to sail in this particular race. I want to sail around the world. And so it's about sort of just going, you know what, no matter what the obstacles might be and the challenges and the skepticism, I'm going to make it happen. And that's her passion, and she made it happen. And I think that's the overarching message for everyone in this film.
Maiden is told in a very linear chronology. So when something happens in the beginning, they show the current day, 30 years later, talking heads, and this is how I felt at that time, and so on and so forth for the next about 90 minutes. The main person we follow is Tracy Edwards. She was the boat's skipper. She was she kind of ran away from home early. She was not liking her living situation with her mother and stepfather, ran away to Greece, learned how to sail out of there on charter boats, and then she heard of the Whitbread Round the World Race, and she thought that was so fascinating. She said, well, let me sign on, and say, wait a minute, women do not sail the Whitbread Round the World Race. She said, I'll do whatever you want. I'll be the cook. I was like, fine, you can be the cook. And that's where she really learned her chops. And then 4 years later, this is like the Olympics. They only do this every 4 years. She said, all right, well, I'm going to put together my own boat. And they chart her progress on getting this secondhand boat. Couldn't find a sponsor. Kind of a pickup crew that she met in bars. limited time to train together. No money. She remortgaged her house. You know, everything was on the line. And she's only 24 years old. So not only were they already outcast by female, but by being female, but they're also kind of outcast because they're kind of a generation apart from these elder sailing statesmen who I don't, not that they're overtly mean to them, but they're certainly not kind. And neither are the journalists. Newsmen show up and they're like, oh, yes, I did not write very kindly, but at least I wasn't the fella from The Guardian, mind you. Guy really tore them apart.
Looking back, maybe I should have been more optimistic about their chances.
So I learned a lot about sailing. I didn't know this race existed. Mm-hmm. I learned, you know, where they go from point to point to point to point, and it takes them the better part of 9 months to do it. People do die in this race. It's kind of like a routine. That's how dangerous it is. They're way down by Antarctica at times. Overall, I really did like it. I thought something was missing, and I think it has to do with the wrap-up. It just ends. So, you know, did they start something? Is there now a women crew every 4 years? Or was this the only time it happened?
I think it is one of those ones that kind of just drives you to go do a little more research and look things like that up. There is a foundation that Tracy Edwards has started to help the maiden. The ship itself is on some round the world tour right now that's part of a fundraiser that's going to try and raise funds for sending girls around the world to get a better education. So there's some of that. I do think I recall, though, hearing that at least a couple of the women went on to be part of other crews. And so I don't think it's necessarily so much about then maintaining all female crews as showing that there were some really good yachts women who took part, and they can be of benefit to some of these other crews and make them more co-ed without it being considered a detriment. And this is, it's a grueling race. And that was surprising to me. I certainly had never paid much attention, didn't really know about this race and this particular story. And so it's a feel-good documentary, ultimately. I think the reason that it sort of takes that linear path is that they just had to maximize the footage that they had from the race itself, and everything else had to just kind of be, they had to just go and dig out whatever they could from the rest of any kind of archival footage from that time, from the news, the news outlets that covered the race. And I think they were forced into that linear delivery. And so it's just it's a standard sports documentary. But what sets it apart is just that girl power sort of go after your dream kind of thing. The other part that I thought was really fascinating was here they ended up having to find a secondhand yacht, one that had basically been retired, and they fix it up themselves because they did not have sponsorship and money. But where they ended up getting their sponsorship was because of a kind of a chance meeting that Tracy Edwards had with Jordan's King Hussein. And that whole part of it to me was just sort of like, how exactly did they meet and stay sort of in contact over the intervening years so that he was apparently a huge influence on telling her to kind of pursue her dream and to go for it, and then really helped fund the whole maiden voyage. So I thought that was kind of a interesting little side angle to the whole story.
Well, I just appreciated the whole package more because I'd never heard about it, and I like documentaries I don't know anything about. I didn't, and more importantly, I didn't know the end. There's some suspense because it's, the race is chopped up into different legs, and you can win a leg, and you can win the whole race. And it's kind of suspenseful but toward the end, so you don't know which boat is going to succeed. You can watch a good sports documentary, like a 30 for 30 or something about the Dream Team, which, like, I already know what happens there. But here, I had no idea. I'd never heard of Tracy Edwards. I never heard of Maiden. I never heard of this race. And that really helps, especially a sports documentary.
Yeah, and the score is really good. So I was very impressed with the music that played throughout. I think it helped sort of boost the drama a little bit, too.
All right, well, let's dive into the festival itself. We usually split up every now and then. I'll bump into you, but I didn't see you this year. We split up, but you got to go to opening night, the opening night big screening gala, which is usually sold out and a fancy affair with sponsors and free booze and suit and ties. So tell me about this year's opening gala.
Yeah, this year's opening gala actually had moved to in the past several years it's been at the museum, which is closing soon in D.C. And this year it was at the National Archives, which is a very cool venue to have this. It was standing room only. It is one of those ones where they do make sure that they fill the auditorium because they always have the filmmakers and usually the people who are at the center of these films show up for the Q&A, which is what happened here. But the opening night was part of their kind of truth and justice theme, which was a portion of some of the documentaries that they showed this year. And the first night was this one called True Justice, Bryan Stevenson's Fight for Equality. And he is this Alabama lawyer who is sort of he was a crusader, and he is fighting for equality in sentencing and in the criminal justice system. And so he has really uncovered all this injustice in terms of African Americans being unfairly sentenced and incarcerated compared to other races, compared to especially the white population. And he goes and he fights for these folks that are sometimes wrongly convicted. There's one guy that was on death row that he managed to get out of prison. There were others that he fought for that he couldn't. You know, you see these journeys where sometimes you don't win. He's fought a couple of cases in front of the Supreme Court. So a very inspiring guy. And so that part of it was really good. You know, it was an okay opening night, but we've seen much more energetic and exciting and fun opening night screenings. And this one was just, it was solid good, but not, it just didn't blow you away. And I miss those years where you would come out of that opening night gala documentary and you just were excited for the days to come. And this one was really a good documentary for like the first two-thirds, but it was way too long. It dragged on in the latter part, and they were obviously trying to tack on a bit about this museum that he was part of opening in Alabama that is sort of a national museum memorial to victims of lynching in the past. And so it didn't fit together. And so by the end, you know, you were just kind of feeling like it hit the same beats over and over again. So while I think what Bryan Stevenson does is just really great and praiseworthy, it was an okay opening, but not a phenomenal opening film.
You hit on what I think is a common theme for this year's film festival is it doesn't reach the heights of years past. I believe it was just a couple of years ago, there was a documentary about Russian doping in the Olympics that won an Oscar later on.
Icarus?
And Icarus. Mm-hmm. And everything this year was just kind of a paler shade of bright. It was, everything was lacking. The crowds were less. I think you spent your majority time at downtown E Street. I stayed up in Silver Spring at AFI Silver, and we compared notes. In years past, you had better be in line. Talk about standing room mm-hmm. only. There are no empty seats. It's hard to move between screenings. You know, you really have to consider, do I want to go to the bathroom? This year, it's let me put my feet up while I'm in the bathroom because I have time. I can maneuver around hallways. I have room to swing my elbows. I don't have to stand in line. I could just show up. That did not used to be the case. Attendance is falling off, and even the packaging this year at AFI's three theaters, one of them, the main one, the main central awesome-looking theater that everybody loves, was still showing Rocket Man, and that movie was released like 5 weeks ago. So we were only stuck in theaters two and three. And I believe that's kind of the same with E Street.
Well, E Street did dedicate most of the theater's screening rooms to this festival, so it was definitely the hub. But it was still, you expected it to be more. You just expected longer lines and more people. I remember the year like that. Hal Holbrook was at opening night for the Mark Twain movie, and you're like, oh, that was so special, and the energy just kind of kept it. The momentum carried through the entire festival, and there was always that one or two unexpected films that you happen to catch that you might not have planned for. Now the scheduling is such that you just don't have many choices once you've committed to the. If you've got a few films that you know you want to see, then you have to build out the rest of your schedule, you know, based on going to those particular screenings, so you can't get to other venues necessarily. And then they're not having as many repeat showings of things so that you can really fit some of these really good ones into your schedule. And things like the shorts, I didn't have a chance to see any of the shorts. And those are sometimes like that serendipitous discovery comes from just stumbling into one of the shorts when you have a little bit of a lag time. And you just didn't have that opportunity for discovery when you've just got dozens and dozens of films that are all being shown mostly in one location, and you have to just kind of get right in line for the next, or go right into the next one, or skip a chunk, you know, chunk entirely. People weren't congregating as much to talk about stuff and then shift gears into what they were going to go see. And that's what I really missed. I missed just that that schmoozing opportunity with the filmmakers, just a little bit of downtime to just let people breathe and discuss the stuff and then still get to another film. I just think that, yeah, the packaging is needs some work. And maybe I think if they did fewer films and really got a few hot button, just powerful ones in there that maybe they would show more than once, it would be a bigger draw. It was just, I think, too many films, and they were all good, but very few were great.
I'll guarantee you they were not all good.
All the ones I saw. Yeah. I saw 10, and I would say, you know, we rate them from 1 to 5. I didn't give any 1s and 2s, and I didn't give any 5s. Everything was in the 3 to 4 range for me. So just nothing. I kept waiting. I kept reserving my 5 for the one that would blow me away, and I just never found it.
I mean, these are festival films, you know, living by the skin of their teeth, and many of them are still looking for distribution. So I'm not going to badmouth the few that I saw that I really did not care for, which is rare. I usually at least like all the films I see at this, but man, I ran into a couple bums this year. Now, it's not kind of been a joke between us in the past. We go see a lot of these films, and we have never, ever seeing the Audience Award winner. You got lucky this year.
I did.
You saw the Audience Award winner, and I've yet to actually ever see one of those, because you never know what it's going
to
be.
And you didn't have 6 hours to kill on a Saturday?
I did not. Well, I was killing 6 hours on a Saturday, but I split it up into between three films. But you just put it all your eggs in one basket that day, and you saw a six-hour film, Hannah.
A six-hour film called Chasing the Moon, and it was not my original intention to see it, but I saw the Apollo 11 film on IMAX twice this year. I've been sort of into the whole space 50th anniversary of the moon landing thing. And our friend Chris Reed, a Baltimore critic, was talking up Chasing the Moon. And so I decided, you know what? I'm just going to do it. Grab a big cup of coffee and go into this 6-hour screening. What I did not anticipate was that there was not going to be any break time built into the 6 hours. It was literally a three-part series of films. So you had 2 hour, 2 hour, 2 hour, culminating in the moon landing, all about the space race. The first 2 hours was really starting with the Soviet Union's launching of Sputnik, and that sort of triggering this ramp up of the space race, through JFK saying, you know, challenging the country to land someone on the moon within the decade of the 60s. And then, you know, the last 2 hours are about the moon landing itself. And I think it won the audience award because there were only about 15 people. They were hardcore, you know, moon and space nuts. and so you're surrounded by people who are only, they're there because they really chose to commit their day to being there. And so I think I would say there's a very good chance that I think I gave it a 4, but I suspect the other 15 people in that screening probably gave it a 5. And so the fact that I stayed engaged for 6 hours. I mean, there were a couple of times like between when the end credits would roll on part one and then part two, the opening credits would happen. And that gave you like 60 seconds to stretch your legs. People stood up sometimes if there was nobody behind them. We'd stand up in the theater room just because we're like, all right, we need to at least get some blood flowing. It was like the distance of a cross-country flight that you're sitting in this theater watching, you know, the whole development of the U.S. space race. And it's very interesting. I love the first 4 hours to me were the most, like, the stuff I didn't know. And there's, like, Khrushchev's son is one of the people you hear talking about really what was happening on the Russia side of things. And but I would almost say, like, that third part, I felt that the Apollo 11 movie captured, the documentary captured some of the same exact stuff because, you know, the moon landing was the moon landing, but in a much more unusual and dramatic fashion. So I would almost say, you know, watch the first 4 hours and then make sure you've seen the Apollo 11 documentary. But all of this, you talk about distribution. This actually is airing on PBS next week. So I think it's July 8th through 10th. It's over the course of 3 nights. So the first 2 hours, second 2 hours, third 2 hours. So people will actually be able to do things like DVR, pause, eat. and so this goes again to just how AFI sort of had a missed opportunity here is the fact that here was, you know, just it was in the smallest of the screening rooms. It was just a relative handful of people, all things considered. And if they had just figured out a better way to market it to, there are a lot of space buffs in this town, and there's all the stuff going on at the Air and Space Museum relating to the moon landing. And if they had said, look, commit a day. We're going to have an 8 hour long day-long screening where there will be a break built in between each of these segments where you can take a break and stretch your legs, go see daylight, get some food. And if they had done something fun, like maybe had space that freeze-dried ice cream or something, it's just sort of a fun little, you know, just break time in the middle of this whole thing. I think a lot more people would have decided to go see it, but instead, I think it just had it was going to be very hard for people that were going with festival passes to say I'm going to spend 6 hours of a Saturday just to see this one particular feature.
Well, I saw a 6 hour movie once. It was at AFI, but we had an intermission at the 3 hour.
Yeah,
point.
Yeah. I mean, you would have thought I expected an intermission, but the fact that there was no intermission, and I still really did get a lot out of it and liked
you're
it.
You're not a 6 hour film person. That's not in your bones.
Yeah.
So good on you. I'm just happy one of us finally saw an audience award winner.
Yeah. No. And I think, you know, it's one that just the achievement. It was talk about inspiring to just. It really was. For those of us who were in the room, we kind of knew, you know, you knew how it was going to end.
Yeah.
But to just kind of get that big picture of how we made it happen, it just made you wish that we could still do something like that today. And it made you very skeptical about the fact that I just don't think all the parts can all fit into place again to achieve something that monumental.
Well, my top two or three, I notice they actually kind of have a theme, and it's people that are tired of the status quo, and they're going to get out and just do something. And you know my favorite documentaries is when I see somebody I have nothing in common with, and I couldn't walk into a room and talk to them. We have no shared experiences. We have no shared history. We don't do the same things. We just go through life differently. And when I see a documentary like that about somebody, and I all of a sudden identify with them. I'm like, oh my God, we're the human condition. We're the same. That's when it really strikes a chord. So my number one film in the festival is called We Are the Radical Monarchs. I have nothing in common with these people.
You are neither radical nor a monarch.
In Oakland, California, mom was going to enroll her daughter in Brownies and Girl Scouts. And she realized, wow, my Oakland minority daughter has nothing in common with these Caucasian cookie sellers who are learning how to sew. You know, that's not what my daughter's experiencing out there on the streets. So she created her own organization called the Radical Monarchs, and they earn badges like Radical Beauty and Black Lives Matter. They're out there on the front lines of social justice. They're marching in the San Francisco Trans March. And they're growing these girls into really powerful members of the community. So, of course, they have the montage of Fox News picking this up, saying, can you believe that? Da, 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 why don't they? And it's like, I see, you know, why she did it. Her daughter did not look like the central core of the Girl Scouts. She couldn't identify with it. They had different, they were growing up different, and it would not have served her. And now the idea of the Radical Monarchs is starting to spread. People are begging this woman, please tell us, teach us how to create a branch over here in our city. And, you know, they're being very careful with it. They don't want it to go too far too fast. But watching these, you know, 9-year-old, 10-year-old little girls experience the 2016 election together, it was just fascinating. It's directed by a woman named Linda Goldstein Knowlton. She's more of a producer. She produced The Shipping News and Whale Rider, if you remember those.
Oh, yeah.
And 34 episodes of Code Black, starring Marsha Gay Harden. So I was like, all right, good on you for getting out there into Oakland and taking on this story that I think it's been profiled on, you know, like maybe a 60 Minutes or something, which mm-hmm. is how the world picked it up. But I was just so flabbergasted. I love when I run into something I cannot identify with, but then am able to latch on to.
Yeah, and I guess for this particular festival, I ended up latching on to some of the ones that had a theme that I was interested in. So there was music and there was some journalism, truth and justice kind of stuff. So I saw one like After Parkland, which was really just following some of the victims of the Parkland school shooting in Florida last year. And that whole, their whole gun control and efforts to mobilize people to vote, young people to vote. So it just looked at what the aftermath, what life was like in the year following this tragedy. And it was done by like two ABC News producers. And so I suspect if it doesn't get picked up for distribution on a wider scale, that it'll just end up sort of being on a 2020 special or something like along those lines. But it was, you know, I was at the March for Our Lives rally. And so when you saw just how that impacted these students, it was an interesting reminder of, wow, what that momentum was at the time and what we really thought was going to potentially happen with gun control and just how impacted these kids were. And there was some really amazing, frightening footage from like cell phones and the audio when you hear the shooting and that kind of stuff I don't think I had seen before or heard before. So even while the story itself is very familiar, you're just kind of getting this this deeper inside look at what happened with Parkland. And it was some of that cell phone footage was probably just some of the most tragic stuff I've ever heard before. Very standard newsy documentary, but I think people will see it eventually in some form.
Well, you mentioned this film festival is having an opportunity to interact with the talent, with the subjects of the films and even the directors. And I had one of those run-ins with the director. I was sitting down going to watch the Amazing Jonathan documentary. And all of a sudden, this woman sits down next to me. And is like, I recognize that dress for some reason. Like, I've seen you somewhere. And I just, I took a look at her. And it's like, I just tweeted about you. It turned out it was Martha Shane. She's a co-director of Picture Character. She's local. She's a Baltimore lady. And I said, yeah, I just tweeted that everyone needs to go see Picture Character because it's a breath of fresh air from these more heavy documentaries like After Parkland, because it's about emojis. Emoji is actually Japanese for picture character. And I know it sounds light as fluff, but, you know, it's the history of the emoji, the beginning of the emoji. But they take it to actually into identity and the cultural shift of emojis. Who decides on emojis? Because you can't just make one and get it into circulation. There's a board. You have to apply. So they follow three kind of specific groups of people that are pushing particular emojis this year. And they go to where, of course, Silicon Valley. They meet the Unicode Consortium. There's the girl that says, hey, I want a hijab emoji. There isn't one, you know. And then there's a lady from Argentina. We want a mate emoji, because that's what we drink down here. It's very interesting to see who gets it and who doesn't get it. The special guest who was in the film was the woman who came up with the skin tone emojis. You know, she was up there in the Q&A saying, well, they said, well, all right, what if we do three skin tones? And she told them, if you do three skin tones, the world will believe you're not taking this seriously. So that's how she got five skin tones on emojis. And it's deeper than an emoji. I've seen the emoji movie, the animated atrocity, because my son loves it. But no, this has nothing to do with that. So the only reason I'm mentioning it is because, yeah, it's a breath of fresh air doc, and I happen to get sit next to the co-director.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. And I kind of missed sort of stumbling into some of those. For me, like, the fresh air one was Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. You know, you can't go wrong with getting this sort of back history and music of this iconic pop star of the 70s. And she was sort of this woman doing her own thing amid a very male-dominated industry at that time. And so I had always kind of wondered, like, you know, what happened to Linda Ronstadt? And she kind of vanished from the scene. Well, it turns out, I mean, she has Parkinson's, and I didn't realize that. And so it kind of stole her voice. And so you kind of learn that, but you see this history of her rise and the fact that she was not going to be pigeonholed. She sang, loved singing opera and country and Mexican folk music, because that was part of what she grew up with. And so to me, it was that was a really interesting one to just kind of escape to at the end of a long night. James Keach was there. He was a producer on this film. And so he introduced it and did a little Q&A afterwards. You know, that was just that was probably my biggest sort of breath of fresh air at the end of a very long screening day.
Yeah, this, you know, festival sets the documentary agenda really for us for the rest of the year. One or two of them usually pop up in Oscar nominations. We talk about them for the rest of the year. Oh, this one was at AFI, or I didn't get to see this one at AFI. And it really does set the tone. So it's, I just like documentary season when it passes around. Anything else you want to squeeze in before we wrap this up?
Well, because I saw so many more than you did.
Well, I saw many, but I just don't want to talk about ones I don't.
But I did. I saw 10. Over the course of 3 days, I think. And so I saw I think one of my favorites then would just be, there were two. I had a journalism day. Mike Wallace is here, which gave you some really interesting insight into Mike Wallace's background before he was a 60 Minutes gotcha kind of guy. He was a pitch man, did cigarette commercials, and was an actor. Really kind of fascinating. So for Newsies, that's a good one. And then the closing night gala was this one called Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins. And she was this journalist and political commentator and author in Texas. And she just really was big on calling out political corruption. She would have had a field day with the current state of politics. She died in 2007. And so while I remember that she had this syndicated column, she was very sharp and witty. It was a really a strong, it was a good choice, I think, for the closing night.
Well, I realize we talked a lot about films you cannot see yet, but remember, there are two you can see right now. You can see Maiden, at least in the major cities, as it expands across the nation. Mm-hmm. And you can see next week on PBS, Chasing the Moon.
Yes. There was another one that they did on David Crosby.
Yeah.
And that one's coming out in August. And I missed that one at the festival, but figure I will catch it when it hits major release. And then there's next week coming up, there is another documentary that we'll be able to watch on Bethany Hamilton called Unstoppable. And so she's the surfer who lost her arm and still managed to a shark attack and still managed to compete. I can tell you're really excited to see that one.
I saw it in my inbox. I saw you send it to me.
I did.
but we did all see that. We saw the widest release next week, which is Stuber.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep that. I'm just going to pronounce like Stuber.
We'll talk about Stuber next week.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to our wrap-up of the AFI Documentary Film Festival 2019 version. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend at RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.